Hello, Capital Region. This is Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. And I'm Lavonia Mallory.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, we speak with Green Party of New York co-chair Peter Lavinia about a rally plan for Tuesday in Albany in support of Julian Assange. Then Mark Dunley speaks with local residents about a natural gas pipeline being planned in East Greenbush. After that, on Reclaiming History, Lavonia Mallory speaks with Sarah Barrett of Sage College about their recent open house. Then Amanda McCreary joins us to introduce Rensselaer Youth Outdoors as well as their upcoming summer program. And on Spirit of the Suffragettes, Cassidy McCabe speaks with local musician Claire Promise about women's empowerment. And to close out the show, Garrett McCary introduces Hudson Mohawk Magazine listeners to Ann Perillo, host, producer of Schenectady Today, in and around the Capital Region.
But Guy, let's start it off with some rapid fire, or at least some fire headlines. Okay, here we go. Reminder, May 4th, 2019, Mayor Kathy Sheehan will honor my brother Guy Mallory at a dedication in Washington Park to commemorate all of his support for community tennis. In addition, Albany Medical Center will be hosting a pulmonary embolism grand round on May 2nd, 2019 with Dr. Kalise Sista from NYU.
Rensselaer County District Attorney Mary Pat Donnelly and her staff have discovered more than $100,000 in uncollected forfeiture money left behind by her predecessor, Joel Abelove, as well as the DA before Abelove, Arthur Glass. The money comes from property seized by police in criminal cases and accrued over years of prosecutions. Apparently, for the funds to be released from evidence and distributed, all the DA's office needs to do is send a form to the police. Law enforcement agencies can claim these seizures for operating expenses. Abelove left a record of poor record keeping. Additionally, his office failed to bring hundreds of felony cases to a grand jury. These cases were then returned to local municipal courts, and 40% were dismissed as a result of inaction.
Price Chopper announces listeria-related recall on fudge bars. Price Chopper and Market 32 supermarkets are issuing a voluntary manufacturer recall by Fieldbrook Foods Corporation on 32-ounce PIC fudge bars with UPC 41735-09250 codes. The manufacturer is recalling the products due to positive test results.
In a legal settlement reached Wednesday, a town in Montgomery County has agreed to pay $25,000 to a gay couple that it denied a marriage license to and amend its policies to permit such marriages going forward. Lambda Legal, a national LGBT rights organization, reached a settlement with the town of Root, whose town clerk last year objected to marriages between same-sex couples on religious grounds.
You may not be protected against the measles outbreak currently being caused by the anti-vaccine movement. Health officials are issuing a warning that people born between 1957 and 1989, that's me, Guy.
I know, and me too.
May not be fully protected against the measles. This is due to a change in vaccine practices in 1989. From a double dose to a single dose. Regardless of your age, health officials recommend checking with your doctor to see if you are at risk of contracting measles and your vaccine and checking on your vaccine status.
Johnson Publishing, the historic former publisher of Ebony and Jet magazines, has filed for bankruptcy. After it sold its magazines in 2016, the company focused on fashion and its vast photo archives. More than seven decades, the iconic black company was at the forefront of African-American culture. The company filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy late yesterday and it plans to sell all its assets.
25-year-old Nigerian fintech entrepreneur Odo Iwini was voted one of the top 100 inspirational women in Nigeria by Forbes Africa. She is named the top 20 young wealthiest creators in Africa. In under 3 years, her startup, Piggy Vest, an automated online saving platform, has helped helped Africans save more than $230,000. No, I'm going to say they helped them save more than $15 million. Yeah. There we go. Guy, do we have a do we have a riddle?
We have that riddle you suggested.
Okay,
right?
Okay. Oh. So what has holes and also stores water? Is that it?
Yeah, what is full of holes but still holds water?
Full of holes but full of water.
Full of holes but still holds,
holds water. Yeah. So it has holes but it holds water. Okay.
Yeah, I have an idea.
You have an idea.
But we'll have to.
But somebody has to call.
Yeah.
And if they call, we get them on the show with you. They get to sit next to you.
Right. Yeah.
There
yeah,
we
yeah.
go. All right. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine on Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, coming to you from the Sanctuary for Independent Media right here in Troy, New York.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or can solve our riddle, you can text us at 518-888-3004.
WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange has been expelled from the Ecuadorian embassy in London and is being held in the United Kingdom for extradition to the United States, where he is very likely to face espionage charges. The Upper Hudson Green Party is organizing an emergency protest on Tuesday, April 16th at 5:30 p.m. outside the Leo O'Brien Federal Building at 1 Clinton Square in Albany to call for the immediate release of Julian Assange and all political prisoners. We are joined right now by Green Party of New York co-chair Peter Lavinia to tell us more. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So can you tell us what's happening to Julian Assange?
Well, you know, what happened is that the asylum that he was granted by Ecuador was revoked, and he was arrested by the British police, and he has been indicted on charges of skipping bail in Great Britain, but it seems that there's also charges against him that have been filed in the United States. So there's a fear that not only is he going to be prosecuted in the UK, but that he'll be extradited to the United States to face, as you said, espionage charges.
So why should our listeners be concerned about this particular case?
I think for a number of reasons. One, you know, this is a major press freedom issue. You know, what WikiLeaks and Julian Assange have done over the last decade is really groundbreaking journalism, from, you know, publishing and showing the collateral murder video, which showed the United States actions actually murdering journalists in Iraq. And it's something that, you know, Chelsea Manning had gone to prison for, accused of leaking that. But also things like the Panama Papers and releasing many, many different pieces of information that most other news outlets, and in fact, WikiLeaks working, you know, kind of in collaboration at certain points, with outlets to kind of people's journalism, right, where people would be able to release this information and WikiLeaks would get it up in a way that was stymied by a more corporate media, more corporate press that didn't actually want to get the information out there. And what it looks like the charges are about stem directly from that collateral murder video that was released on WikiLeaks' website, and Julian Assange is essentially charged with doing journalism, which is accepting the video, putting it up online, and encouraging his source to potentially give more information. And, you know, some of you, your listeners may have heard Glenn Greenwald, who's been a supporter of WikiLeaks over the years, say that this is essentially what journalists do. They ask their sources to, you know, continue to provide information. So it seems like what Assange was doing, even at that point in time, was asking nothing more than any other journalist would do. So if this comes to be and Assange is extradited, you know, this is a major strike against press freedom. That means anybody could potentially be, any journalist could be extradited for doing something similar, which is just their job. And I think number two, another major reason why we should be concerned about this is because this is another instance of, you know, U.S. Reach essentially imperialism to a country like Ecuador. There's been extreme pressure put on Ecuador over the last few years to expel Julian Assange, and it looks like it finally came to fruition. WikiLeaks had published information about the current president, Lenin Moreno, and some of his corrupt offshore dealings, essentially having offshore bank accounts. He didn't quite like that, and then the U.S. Gave Ecuador a multi-billion dollar aid package. And I think that this is also a disturbing trend where the U.S. essentially is, again, intervening very heavily in South American, Latin American politics and you know, using its influence to revoke what is a very special status of political asylum. I mean, we should be very wary and upset that the United States government has intervened in this sense. So, you know, we are both looking at, you know, defending someone like Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and the cause of the free press and standing against U.S. intervention and kind of the long arm of U.S. imperialism.
I mean, that's some pretty strong language when you start saying that it's U.S. imperialism, when you start talking about money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't seem as straightforward as just, you know, freedom of the press, that there may be some other issues happening behind the scene.
I mean, I'm sure that there are other things that are happening, but it looks like Assange has and WikiLeaks have bothered the United States and a number of other powers around the globe for the last decade because of they, you know, they essentially function as a place where, you know, the people can have this kind of information, you know, brought to the light of day, that the bureaucratic secrets, that state secrets, that powerful people don't want brought out when it's a place for it to be brought out. And I think that the United States under Barack Obama and under, you know, Donald Trump have been attempting to get Julian Assange extradited, and they finally managed to get him at least arrested in Great Britain. So I think that the majority of this is, you know, the United States wanting to say, you can't do this. We do not want journalists looking into this information as deeply and as openly as Assange and WikiLeaks want.
So can you tell us who is going to be participating in the rally, and again, where and what time will it start?
Correct. Well, you know, we're in right now, the Upper Hudson Green Party is hosting it, but we are asking anyone who would like to participate to come to the rally and to take a stand for that press freedom and for Julian Assange's freedom. It is going to be at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, and it will be at the outside of the Leo O'Brien Federal Building at 1 Clinton Square. That's right across from the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. So again, 5:30 p.m. to about 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, the 16th.
And lastly, how can people find out more about the Julian Assange case?
I would say that a good place to check would be The Intercept online or Democracy Now. Those are two great sources in terms of finding information that goes a little deeper than the corporate media.
All right.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about the Julian Assange case. It's really helpful to have all these perspectives and to know more about this rally that's coming up. And it's very meaningful to those of us in citizen journalism who are concerned about the treatment of sources and WikiLeaks. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter,
awesome.
For joining
thank
us
you.
Already.
Yeah. That was Green Party of New York co-chair Peter Lavinia on the Free Assange rally, planned for 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Federal Building in Albany. Next up. Despite Governor Cuomo and the New York legislature's proposed commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, new fossil fuel infrastructure continues to be built in New York State. Becky Meyer is a retired school teacher and an environmental activist, and she's been keenly involved in resisting a new pipeline in her community called E37 Reliability and Resiliency Pipeline.
We're talking with Becky Meyer, who's with the Community Advocates for a Sustainable Environment, and she's actually attending a hearing being held by a proposal by National Grid to build another New York frack gas pipeline that would stretch from Albany to Rensselaer County. Becky, can you give people a little background about what this pipeline's about?
Well, National Grid says it's called E37 Pipeline Resiliency and Reliability. And this is the new, somebody from the Public Service Commission just said this is the sixth one of these small pipelines that they've approved. So they're to increase future growth in the gas industry. And for the very few coldest days of the year, there's a shortage, and so they need to build a whole pipeline that costs $7 million and takes 3 years and disrupts the community for those few coldest days.
Just for perspective, what is a small pipeline?
This is 7.3 miles.
I understand it goes to Bethlehem East and North Greenbush?
It starts right at the Albany port. I think it's only 880 feet in Bethlehem, goes under the Hudson River, which, of course, is one of our concerns, under Route 4, under Route 90. Mostly it's in East Greenbush, and then it ends up in North Greenbush, where it meets with their other pipeline.
And I believe it's a 16-inch diameter pipeline?
That's what I'm trying to find
out. It's 16-inch diameter.
Okay, very good. Yeah. I've got several pieces of paper.
So what were some of the concerns?
Concerns are multiple. One is that this gas pipeline is being paid for by rate payer hikes. So a year and a half ago, the company went to the Public Service Commission and asked for a rate hike for many things, and this $7 million project was included. And so if it gets approved, the taxpayers pay for it, which means there's no risk for the company, no incentive to come up with alternatives, since they will make money by the expansion of their product. And we're very concerned about climate change and feel that we cannot afford any fossil fuel infrastructure, new fossil fuel infrastructure, and everything. We can't get to whatever goals, even the limited goals that the governor calls 80 by 20?
80 by 2050. Right.
So those are pretty small, but we can't get to them by continuing to build fossil fuel infrastructure. We're in a new century. We need to be looking at new technologies. I have geothermal heat. All new homes should be built with geothermal heat. Dandelion is retrofitting existing homes for geothermal. There are ways to mitigate the few days a year when there's a shortage. We shouldn't have to build a whole new pipeline just for a few days.
Can you explain some of the problems in terms of climate with respect to, you know, using natural gas?
Well, all gas that comes into New York State at this point is fracked gas. So by building more pipelines and more capacity, we're asking for more fracking. New York State banned fracking, but we use fracked gas and transmit fracked gas, although we don't mine it in this state. So we're putting, there are incredible health consequences of fracking and incredible climate changes at the site where they do the fracking. And, of course, on my way here, I heard about two gas explosions, and my niece is a teacher in Lawrence, and her students were in temporary housing for weeks because of that gas explosion. So that's public safety, and, of course, when they explode, they let a lot of methane. People talk gas is low carbon emission, but it is methane, and methane gas is actually a bigger climate changer than is carbon dioxide.
Yeah, I understand that methane is something like 83 times more potent as a greenhouse gas, like, say, in a couple of decades as compared to carbon?
Right. There's a short term and a long term. And in the short term, it's much more lethal.
So what was the hearing? What was the hearing that you all were attending and participating in today?
So this is the only, the Public Service Commission is the entity that makes a decision on this application. And there, the company, National Grid, is expecting a decision by this summer so they can start in the fall. They expect it to take 3 years. That's a lot of disruption to a community. And so this is the only chance that the public has for a hearing to come out and speak to. We're speaking to the Public Service Commission itself. We can, people can look up National Grid E37 Reliability and Resilience Project. Anybody can comment on their public comment line on the Internet. The official public period ends April 24th, which we think is ridiculous. So they say they will continue to accept and read comments after that. But tonight I asked the commissioners or the staff at the Public Service Commission, and a lot of the protections that are given for pipelines that are bigger than or longer than 10 miles do not exist for this one that is less than. There's a separate set of regulations for pipelines less than 10 miles. And there's much less, there's something called an evidentiary hearing that's required for bigger pipelines, but it's discretionary. So I guess we might also begin to advocate for this evidentiary hearing, which is not required, but apparently it could be done, where different sides bring evidence to whether this is required.
By the time a project gets to the public hearing stage, it's most likely going to be approved. Unfortunately, how can we try and prevent these projects, you know, right at the beginning? Is there a way to nip it in the bud?
Two things. One, I think we need to start putting political pressure. So I would recommend that people talk to their local officials, their state assembly people, and their state senators. We need to change the laws that were written in 1970 regulating all this. And I think we need to be aware of when these rate hike hearings are, because it all starts there. So I'm going to be keeping an eye out. They say they put some public notice in some little tiny spot in the newspaper.
At what point in the process do they have rate hike hearings?
My guess is at the very beginning, because if they don't think they're going to get the pipeline paid for, they're not going to go do... The amount of work they have done is amazing, as you say. It's kind of a done deal. They spent a year and a half surveying it and writing reports and talking to landowners. They're not going to do that if they don't think they're going to get the pipeline paid for.
Becky, we have about a minute left. So if people... want to find out more information about this project, joined up with your group, can they do? And I'll give you a second part of the question in the last 90 seconds. And how do you feel about President Trump's push today to actually remove state authorities from, you know, dealing with these pipeline issues?
Well, it's absolutely predictable, but terrible, just terrible, taking away rights, citizens, states, anyone who gets in the way of his fossil fuel industry. But we have a website, caseonline.org, and on there, there's ways to reach us by phone, by email. We have information about the pipeline. We'll have information about making public comments. And, you know, write letters to the editor, talk to your elected officials, get involved.
Becky, you mentioned that this is a short pipeline and it doesn't need the special hearing that the longer pipelines require. It almost, and you said that they've approved several of these. It almost seems suspicious that they just break it up into smaller pieces to circumvent that requirement.
It's possible, you know, and again, I haven't looked at all the rest, so I wouldn't want to say. In this case, there is a case to be made. If I was thinking the way they were thinking, they're trying to make a loop so the gas can move two ways. And this short pipeline does create a loop where before it was a horseshoe. Well, so there's a certain logic to what they're saying, but we just can't keep increasing fossil fuels.
Okay. Well, Becky Meyer from Community Advocates for a Sustainable Environment, I want to thank you for joining us today. And this has been Alexis Goldsmith and Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That was WOC correspondent Mark Dunley and Alexis Goldsmith talking with Becky Meyer about the E37 Reliability and Resiliency Pipeline planned for East Greenbush.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine, airing on WOOC 105.3 FM in Troy and WOOS 98.9 FM in Schenectady.
In another segment of Reclaiming History, Lavonia Mallory speaks to Sarah Barrett, Director of Undergraduate Enrollment Management at Sage College, after a recent open house at the college.
Once again, we have another segment of Reclaiming History with Lavonia Mallory. I'm here at Sage College right here in Troy, New York. And, you know, talk about reclaiming history. This is a place that is making history and has made history. Today, they had an open house, and I'm interviewing one of the administrators here. Tell my listeners your name and what you do here at the college.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Barrett, and I'm the Director of Undergraduate Enrollment here at Sage. So I work with first-year freshman students coming out of high school, transfer students that are looking to transition from maybe a two-year institution, come on and get their bachelor's. We help them through the admission phase and really welcome them to the Sage community.
So today is open house, and I was at the open house pretending to be a student. Not really. I was just sort of observing. And I was very impressed by just the warmth and the open reception of all of the people who came and presented their segments to the students at the sort of, you know, it was like a minute or 4 minute discussion, and then they would change and the next person would come over. Is that the hallmark of this university, warmth and openness?
It sure is. We certainly pride ourselves in that one-on-one student attention, making sure that when a student comes to Sage, they feel welcomed, they feel supported, they have everything they need to go on, take their classes, continue their passion, and go out in the real world feeling prepared. That's certainly a staple and a hallmark of what we do here at Sage.
So tell me, what is the history of Sage? I mean, I've walked around. Is it a women's school? Is it not a women's school? Like, how did it start? I keep, you know, I hear things, but maybe my listeners know a little bit more than me.
Sure. Sage was founded in 1916 by Margaret Olivia Slocum Sage. Her husband, Russell Sage, had passed away, and she inherited his funds, which were quite a lot for the time, 1916, and together along with Emma Willard started a women's institution. So here at Sage, we have over 100-year history of educating women of influence. And coming in fall 2020, Russell Sage is going to be going co-ed. We're very excited for the opportunity that students, all students, will be able to come to Russell Sage and feel that sense of empowerment and the support and welcoming nature that we offer.
So what sort of majors do you have here at the university?
Sure. Our most popular majors are our health sciences. Nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, but we also offer visual and performing arts as well. Our theater department right now has a great production happening. It's called Unofficial Transcript. It was written, directed, produced, acted by Sage students, which is very exciting. We also have business administration as a wonderful program that leads into our graduate schools. We have over 35 different programs here on campus.
So when you say you're going co-ed, that doesn't mean that you don't have males as students. They just don't live on the campus as of today.
That is correct. So it remains currently residentially all female, but gentlemen are certainly involved in the classes. And in 2020, they'll be living here on campus as well.
Do you think that's going to change the university environment in any way?
I think it changes it in the most positive way. Again, that sense of welcoming community that you had today, we want everyone to experience that here at Sage. So we're very excited for the next chapter.
So as I was listening to everyone, there was something that I was really enthusiastic about, the program called Exploration. So you sort of get to explore the college environment.
Sure. So especially for undergraduate students where they may not be sure exactly what they want to do, our program Academic Exploration is kind of our undecided option. So students can come in, they work directly with their academic advisor to say, I have an interest in X, Y, and Z. And we allow them to take courses in those disciplines so that way they can find their passion and find what they really do enjoy and make a career from that.
Why do you work here?
I love working with young adults. I believe in the power of education. I believe in the power of knowledge. And so it's exciting. Every day is different here at Sage. And having the opportunity to work with students and help them fulfill their dreams to become a nurse, become a physical therapist, to be a graphic designer, that's exciting to me. I love being here at Sage.
So do you have open enrollment, or is there a time in which you accept applications?
Sure, we certainly offer rolling admissions, so students can apply anytime. We're certainly still accepting applications for our upcoming fall semester. Come on by, let us know, start your application at sage.edu/apply.
And what is the general overall, I guess, tuition? If I'm gonna come here as a full-time student, ballpark, how much would it cost me?
Sure, our sticker price is about $42,000. However, we offer generous merit scholarships that range for first-year students between $14,000 and $20,000, and for our transfer students coming in, up to $15,000.
And if I'm a transfer student or I'm a returning student, an older student, how many weekend or summer, you know, intensive courses do you offer? What about evening classes?
Sure. We understand that students have a lot going on in their lives. We certainly offer extended weekend classes. We have a summer cohort. We also have the Sage Professional and Continuing Education Program, in which all of those classes take place in the evening.
Is there anything else we've missed that you definitely want my listeners to know about Sage College?
I think the most important thing to know about the Sage Colleges is that we have two campuses, one in Albany, one in Troy. As a Sage student, you're a student of both campuses. It's nice to be able to take classes on both campuses. And again, where we talked about academic exploration, find that passion. It might be in two or three different disciplines, but here at Sage, we can match you to those. You work very closely with your academic advisors in the Sage community here.
So tell my listeners again, if they want to come to the university and be a student, how could they register online or get information?
Absolutely. All of that is found at sage.edu. Right on the top area there, there's an Apply Now button. And of course, we have all of our events coming up. Our next event will be a spring open house on our Albany campus on April 27th at 10 o'clock. So I hope to see you there.
All right. Thank you once again for joining us on WOOC 105.3 FM, the Sanctuary for Independent Media. This is another segment of Reclaiming History with Lavonia Mallory. That was one of my segments, Reclaiming History with Sarah Barrett, the Director of Undergraduate Enrollment Management at Sage College, at their most recent open house. Very warm and open campus, Guy. I had a great time there.
Yeah. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Guy Schaefer.
And I'm Lavonia Mallory, and you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or a sour bone to pick, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
Amanda McCreary joins us to introduce Rensselaer Youth Outdoors, as well as their upcoming summer program. In addition to youth participants, they are seeking crew chiefs for hire. Learn more at ryoutdoors.org. That's ryoutdoors.org.
So what is Rensselaer Youth Outdoors?
Rensselaer Youth Outdoors is a partnership between the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance, Dike and Pond Environmental Education Center, and Grafton Lake State Park. And those are three parks that have for quite a few years worked on improving access to the environment, improving environmental education to the area, all throughout Rensselaer County, not just on the plateau. And they realized that they were duplicating a lot of their efforts.
Mm.
And so they decided to create this partnership. And so my job is to make sure that they're not duplicating their efforts, make sure that we can identify areas that are overlooked and missed, and work to share resources with the community, identify what the needs are of the community and how to get people out into wild spaces to appreciate what's out there and to work on creating a more sustainable community and appreciating, you know, the science and wonder of nature.
So how long has Rensselaer Youth Outdoors been in existence?
The concept started in about 2017, and it really started to take off last year with, they developed a pilot program to get into schools where they would do an initial trip. They would bring an educator into the school to talk about a certain subject, and then pair that with a field trip to one of the park sites and then follow up with a third trip. And we are working on that with several schools in Avril Park and Berlin school districts. And this year, we're really starting to expand that some more and identifying more community members that want to get involved and really just sort of growing our reach.
Did you say earlier that you guys are developing relationships with schools in Troy as well?
Yes, we are working on getting into Troy schools. Right now, we're kind of just letting them know that we're here. We're available. You guys can come and take some field trips, or you can maybe book to have an educator come to your school. We also have a program where we have these teacher backpack kits where you can, the teachers can sign up to take out a kit that focuses on birds or insects or trees, or there's one that's a general private eye collection. And it's an entire curriculum that they can use to study the world around them. And it doesn't even need to be in an area that has a lot of forest. You can take it out to your schoolyard. You can find just a patch of bare grass and do some research and look around and just be outside.
Yes, nature is everywhere.
Yes, it is.
And so how long have you been working with Rensselaer Youth Outdoors?
I am pretty recent. I just started in the end of January.
And you're the first ever program coordinator for the project?
No, actually, I'm the second.
Okay.
There was one who worked last year, and she moved on to a different position, so they hired me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And you guys have some exciting news for this summer, the Forest Conservation Corps.
Yes, we do.
Can you tell us about that?
Yep. It is a program for teens aged 14 to 16 throughout Rensselaer County, and it is a week-long program where it's part work and part environmental education and recreation, where they work on clearing trails or building structures that certain parks need. And then for the other half of the day, they learn about animal adaptations or natural habitat or life cycles. And they might learn survival skills. And then they might spend some time kayaking or fishing or just hiking. And
the youth are paid to be a part of this.
They do get a stipend at the end of the week. They get $100 at the end if they show up every day, if they're on time, if they're well-behaved, if they prove that they can be responsible young adults. And
is this a one-time, one-week thing, or it's something you guys are doing a couple times?
We are doing 4 weeks. 1 week with Dyken Pond Environmental Education Center, 1 week with Grafton Lake State Park, and then 2 weeks with the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance, one at each of their community forests, the Postenkill Community Forest and the Albert Family Community Forest.
So for anybody who's listening who might know a teenager who's a good fit for the program, how can they learn more?
They can visit the Rensselaer Youth Outdoors website. They can visit any of the other park websites, Dyken Pond, Grafton Lakes, or RPA, and the information will be on their websites.
Do you have one of those URLs handy for us?
Yes, the Dyken Pond website is just dykenpond.org. Let me see. The Grafton Lakes State Park, you can actually reach through the DEC website. You can really just Google Grafton Lakes State Park. And same for the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance.
Thanks, Amanda. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to take this opportunity to share with the world?
We are just working on getting people outside to appreciate nature, get people to look up from their phones or their TVs or their computer screens and just learn that nature is all around you and it's a good thing and it can improve your entire life. It's good for your mood. It's good for anxiety. It's good for your health. It gets you exercise and it's great for the entire community.
Thank you.
That was Amanda McCreary talking about Rensselaer Youth Outdoors, as well as their upcoming summer program.
Once again, we have another segment of The Spirit of the Suffragettes with Cassidy McCabe, our engineer today.
Yay.
As we prepare for the upcoming summer concert series and community resource fair, 7th Annual Freedom Festival on Saturday, June. And today she's speaking with Claire Promise, a local musician.
My name is Cassidy McCabe, and today I'm here with Claire Promise. In anticipation for the Spirit of the Suffragette Festival, we'll be looking at how the history of women's suffrage has impacted the present day and what sorts of social justice work can be done to move forward. Claire, would you be able to share what sort of work you do?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. I am a musician. I'm a songwriter and a performer.
Cool.
Singer as well.
Is there anything happening right now that's related to your work?
Yes, actually, the big anticipation of my event on May 23rd at the Albany Barn in Albany, New York, 56 2nd Street. It's an event to actually bring people together to break free of the stigma and the labels of people with mental illness, addictions, any type of struggles that people go through, and how we all overcome them through the arts.
Is there anyone that inspires your work or introduced you to the work you do?
I've been performing since I was 6 years old, so I was in performing arts, musical theater. Actually, I just basically used to sit in front of like a speaker, and I was always so drawn to like MTV and stuff like that. I've always been, actually Madonna is a huge inspiration for me because they told her not to be this and not to be that, not to do things certain way, and she did it anyway, and she became legendary.
In what ways would you say our social rights movements have changed in relation to the suffragette movement?
I think it's changed tremendously. I think that women back then pretty much risked their lives to do what they do. I think that now people, it's more, you know, common for people to express themselves with they feel, have an opinion. Everyone's a very opinionated, you know, in 2018. Mm-hmm. But on the back end of that, the consequences have changed tremendously. Like back then, like I said, the women pretty much risked their lives to do what they do. And nowadays you go out and protest, nothing's really going to happen. So they paved the way. And I'm grateful for that.
And would you consider yourself an activist?
I've never really thought of myself as one or been called that. In terms of an activist, I like to just let the world know and hear me through my music, you know, just be heard in terms of empowering women, inspirational, you know, through my voice to let them know that they can be themselves and be creative no matter what. Any person, any man, anything tells them to be themselves.
Could you share with us some of the stories or issues you focus on in your music?
Yeah, actually, one of my songs called My Time, it actually starts out, it says, my mama always told me I'd never be a star. My friends always think I'm wasting my time. You know, those are just certain verses from my song. But I, you know, I say, people get ready, it's my time. Basically saying like, I'm telling you, it's my time. And another song that I have is, they always told me that I wasn't fit for the game, like the music industry, you know, because a lot of people in the hip hop game say, oh, you're trying to steal that from us, racism wise. They told me that I didn't have what it takes, you know, a lot of men thought, oh, just be a groupie, just sit there and look pretty. We don't want you to sing on the mic, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And it took me a lot of years to soul search and find myself as a woman. And that's big on why I'm doing this event, just to, you know, that it's who I am. So, you know, no matter how hard you stop me from being who I am, I might like let you do it for a minute, you know, and like try that because I don't know better. But like eventually I'm going to come into who I am. And I, you know, and that's where I'm at today.
Are there any inspirations specifically for the music you write?
Like I said, Madonna has because like a lot of all like on the Immaculate Collection, she does Holiday, Vogue, like, you know, Papa Don't Preach. They all sound different. They don't all have like a, you know, the same like trap sound or it's all this one genre. They all have different sounds. And a lot of my songs, like some of them are dance and some of them are hip hop. And like, you know, and sometimes people will be like, oh, I thought you did R&B. And I'm like, no, I just do good music. I don't really have a genre. So.
What kind of work do you do that you think could connect to the suffragette movement?
Definitely, you know, music, obviously. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm sort of stepping outside the box and putting together an event for the first time instead of like performing at an event. And everything that I've taken in over the years of doing over like 600, you know, like showcases and all over. I was never heard because I was a female. I never got to go on stage because, like, you know, guys got on first. Or when I got on stage, people would, you know, guys would be like, oh, what's she doing up there? Like, I've dealt with that personally. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to be heard equally at this event. And I want everyone to know that we're all equal. Everyone gets a chance to shine. And you go on the time slot I give you, you know, everything's mm-hmm. organized. And it's just all love. It's all, it's nothing but love. Guy or girl, or whatever yeah. you claim to be, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking of how we look at the suffragette movement and the women who progressed that movement as major history makers, who would you nominate as a modern figure of our current social rights movements?
That's a good one. It probably sounds like cliche, but, you know, I would definitely do my mother. Because as years go on, I've, like, known to appreciate and also be aware of things that she does. You know, she goes to protests to stop special housing unit for the prison systems. She goes to, you know, rallies. She is an activist in the community. She's always putting up Facebook posts about, you know, Donald Trump and things that he's done or not doing just to make people aware if they don't know. And she is, like, she's not afraid to speak her mind. And, you know, I really, really admire her for that.
Thank you for your time,
Claire. Thank you.
And for more information about the upcoming Women's Resource Fair and Summer Festival, please visit mediasanctuary.org and be sure to save the dates for our summer festival. We're launching with the 7th Annual Freedom Festival on Saturday, June 8th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. with featured artist, jazz legend Faye Victor and the Mutation for Justice. The festival and resource fair will then continue every Tuesday, 4 to 7 p.m. from July 16th through August 20th and close with the 9th Annual Story Harvest Celebration on September 21st. Thank you for listening to this week's piece on the spirit of the suffragettes.
That was Cassidy McCabe, our engineer, talking to Claire Promise, a local musician, about inspiration, women's empowerment, and mental health as part of the Spirit of the Suffragette series.
Next up, to close out the show, Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Garrett McCary introduces Hudson Mohawk Magazine listeners to Ann Perillo, host/producer of Schenectady Today in and around the Capital Region, one of the longest-running public access TV programs in the country. They then discuss the Eel Project and counting eels in the Post and Kill.
It's Tuesday morning. I am in the Addy Theater, third floor, Proctor's in Schenectady. There's a table set up for registration. Mary Lou Samaha and Marie Ballack check me in. Janice Walls checks to see if the graphics I sent are correct. I will be in segment 5 of Schenectady Today in and around the Capital Region, a public access television program produced at Open Stage Media. There are 3 cameras. The new technical director, Katie DiRico, is aligning her shots with the floor manager, Malcolm Cogan. The guests are invited to sit with the audience. We're about to begin. Okay, I'll say it, though no one really says it in television. Lights, camera, action.
Welcome to Schenectady Today in and around the Capital Region. I'm so happy you're joining us today. We've got a really great show today with lots of interesting information. You might want to get a pad out and start making some notes about some of this that we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be starting out with an attorney, and we're going to be going to the legal quarter and finding out about the new laws that are coming up and what's going on. And we may ask them a few questions from out in left field somewhere. And then we're going with Habitat for Humanity to find out about their community symposium that's coming up. We're very fortunate to have an international award-winning photojournalist joining them as well. Then the Girl Scouts will be talking about camping. What a great way for kids to spend the summer is to do some camping. And then we're going to be talking with Zeb Schmidt, who is the program director of Open Stage Media, just to kind of check out what's going on here at Open Stage Media, which is where we're filming. And then we're going to be talking about, did you know there's an eel project? Yes, there is. DEC has an eel research project. We're going to learn all about that.
Schenectady Today features people from all walks of life. You might tune in to see David Kaczynski, brother of the Unabomber, the actors in a local theater production. or Sawyer Frederick's winner of The Voice TV show. You might hear from the last surviving member of the bird expedition to Antarctica, listen to a children's choir, a jazz band, or a folk duet, find out what's happening at the Museum of Innovation and Science. You might even see a live llama. More likely, you'll hear what volunteers from your community nonprofit organizations are doing.
I went through all of your photos, I think almost all of them, and I was just like amazed at some of your photos. They're so gritty.
Yes, gritty.
Gritty.
Well, that's what poverty is. Poverty is gritty.
Yeah.
Poverty is hard. And it's hard to find your way out of poverty, which is where part of the solution is Habitat for Humanity feels is home ownership and the self-investment and the self-determination that comes with that. What Brenda is bringing to us is the opportunity to have a panel discussion on April 25th mm-hmm. at the First Reformed Church in the Stockade.
Yeah, great place.
Great, beautiful, beautiful venue.
Yeah.
And we are going to have a panel discussion. Community leaders are going to be involved. Folks
raising
that are currently
raising
the awareness, and not only raising the awareness, but what are some solutions? What are we all going to walk out of that room with and be able to affect a true change?
After 45 minutes or so, I'm about to go on. I'll be interviewed by longtime host producer Ann Perillo, Proctor's 2018 Volunteer of the Year and a recipient of the City of Schenectady's Patroon Award. Here's an abbreviated version of that segment.
And here we are back again, and with me is my friend Garrett McCary. I've known him for a long time. He's come to my rescue a number of times with television. So anyway, here we are talking about eels. Who would have thought of that?
We're doing a little experiment with this segment, aren't we?
We're doing an experiment, yes.
I'm working with the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, and they have a radio station.
Great place, great place.
It's called WOOC. But they do a nightly program called the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. So I proposed to them that we take a little segment of your program, which is all community, as we
right.
know.
Right, yeah, you can tell. We did the law and we've done everything
we've
here.
Done, you've done everything yeah. here. And that we take one segment a week and we put it on there. Can you give me a little bit of history of what this program is?
Oh, well, you're watching Schenectady Today in and around the Capital Region. We've been on the air going into our 21st year, and we really enjoy meeting new people, new guests, and promoting the Capital Region, the entire Capital Region.
You could be the longest running community program in the country.
I'm glad you didn't say oldest, but.
longest. Well, that goes without saying. Okay, so folks, for the radio audience, that's what you're listening to, Ann Perillo, who is a marvelous host. I'm so happy that she's able to participate in this experiment.
Always fun.
Okay, so let's talk about eels.
Yeah, let's talk about eels. Who would have thought eels? And then when you tell me they come from the Bermuda Triangle area, all the way up the Hudson, those guys must really like to swim.
They really like to swim. Yeah, the life cycle of an eel is very interesting because unlike salmon and striped bass and herring, which live in the ocean and come up and they spawn in the freshwater.
And then they die.
Some of them die, but yeah. you know, the stripers yeah. don't.
Somebody has to live.
But yeah, somebody has to live. The eels actually live in freshwater, in your ponds and lakes and streams and creeks. And then, after about 8 or 9 years, they decide, it's time to go spawn.
So they live quite a long time then,
they
if they
do
don't
live,
get eaten.
If they don't get eaten, yes. And in this country, we don't eat eels very much. But in Europe, it's a delicacy. And, of course, in Japan, it is.
But so they're bigger. They don't. These are little eels.
Let me finish my story.
So the
eels all swim down on some dark night in September. You can get thousands of eels swimming back to the Sargasso Sea, 1,500 miles away, and so they. And then they get, and no one really knows exactly where, but you have to picture this now, a giant eel ball somewhere in the middle of the ocean where they're all laying eggs, sperm.
Yeah,
and then
it's a love fest.
It's an eel love fest. You think Woodstock was something. This is eel stock.
So anyway, so then they lay the eggs, and the eggs kind of swim around a bit, and then they hatch into these little baby glass eels. And they're called
glass eels.
Glass eels, yeah. And you can see through them. And then they swim back up, all the way up the Hudson, all the way up every little creek, and they do this in the springtime. So the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, has been doing a program for about 10 years now where they have been capturing eels in all of the tributaries of the Hudson and counting them and then releasing them because they just want to get a base
information. Find out how many are coming through.
How many are coming through, what's going on.
Now I'm a little confused because these are freshwater eels.
They're freshwater eels, yeah.
Well, but they spawn, go through the ocean.
But they spawn in the ocean.
So they're both saltwater and freshwater.
Exactly. So anyway, so these little eels come up, and we capture them, and we're trying to get a base as to how many eels there are. And also, it could be like an indicator species, so that if...
Frogs.
Like frogs are in the world right now, and the old canary in the coal mine, you know... Of what's going on with the environment.
Exactly.
And so we are actually having a meeting on April 16th at the Mount Ida Preservation Hall, which is on Congress Street in Troy. It's the old church up there.
You're going to give a presentation?
And no, the DEC is
DEC
coming
is,
up.
Okay.
And they're actually going to bring some eels, because the eels are coming up the river. They're just not all the way up here. So we're hoping that this... the Post and Kill station will become a permanent station
every year. Yeah.
Because it is the last major tributary before the locks. You know, and as I say, it's fun to do. It changes with the tide. You can only get the net in low tide. So every day there's a different time. So,
oh, yeah, that's exactly because you go based on tide.
And we're going to do it for like a month or 6 weeks according to how many eels we get.
It's exciting.
It is very exciting.
Yeah. Who thought about, you ever think you'd be counting eels?
No.
We've been talking with Garrett McCary, and he's an eel counter. I guess you could say that.
Eel counter. Okay. Marshmallow maker, eel counter, whatever you want to call me.
For more information on how you can be a guest or an audience member or on the crew, go to SchenectadyToday.com or message Ann Perillo on Facebook. To learn more about the Eel Project on the Post and Kill, come to Mount Ida Preservation Hall, 548 Congress Street, Troy, on Tuesday, April 16th at 5:30 p.m. or email aiden.mabey, that's A-I-D-A-N dot M-A-B-E-Y, at dec.ny.gov. Learn how you can get involved. Hey, it's time to get in the water.
That was correspondent Gary McCary talking to Ann Perillo about Schenectady Today in the Around the Capital Region, one of the longest running public access TV programs in the country. Guy, guess what?
Oh, is it that time again?
That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I am Lavonia Mallory.
And I am Guy Schaefer. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers just like us. If you're interested in volunteering at our show, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks.
Thanks for tuning in.